That's right. It's another edition of the Cultural Hall.
Hey.
Wow.
Because I wanted to take over because this episode is episode
54
with your host, Rob, and your other Cultural Hall panel members who we have here today with us to interview the one, the only, the impeccable Richie T. Stedman.
I'm impeccable.
Yay.
Introduce yourselves.
So let's go around the table and let's say hello.
I think he's looking at you, Brother Kyle.
Oh, me? Oh, I'm Brother Kyle.
I'm Brianne.
Ashley Garby Smith.
And Brittany, your soon-to-be-not-so-anxious white virgin.
So who we have
What? What? Announcement?
Let's interview Brittany.
Here we have here today is Richie T. Stedman. Now, according to your Wikipedia file...
Okay.
You don't have one.
I do.
Oh,
you do have
really?
A wiki?
Yeah.
Let's go to it right now.
Oh, yeah, open it up.
How are you able to get a wiki?
Because he made it for himself.
Oh, I see. I'm on IMDb.
So I am, too.
Oh, yeah. That's not impressive, is it?
I was in a movie once.
Yeah. Twice.
Are you wikiing right now?
Three times, lady.
It's a little bit old, but he's looks like he's going to it right now.
I'm on this really cool website called The Cultural Hall.
I'm kind of a big deal.
I Googled you, and that's the website that came
bio.
Up.
People throw Slurpees at me as I walk down the road. Whatever.
Same thing.
I found Radio from Hell.
And then if you scroll down, I'm there underneath.
Are we having an earthquake? What just happened?
So like, should we just go to the Richie T part?
Yeah.
Richard Thomas Stedman is the Radio from Hell show fresh-faced Mormon, senior executive producer and grassroots outreach coordinator. He is not a host on Radio from Hell, but he does appear sporadically on the show with anecdotes of his own. He began as an intern for Carrie, Bill, and Gina, but he eventually became a paid employee of the station. Richie hosts the Richie T Experience on Saturday morning on X96. Richie T is a graduate of Southern Utah University, where he was a DJ and the roommate of Rob Ferry, Life with Party DJ. He also participated in the SUU show choir Acclamation. He was also runner-up to Rob Ferry, who was Mr. SUU.
But I also was Mr. SUU.
He was Mr. SUU the next year. Richie is currently attending Richie is currently attending the University of Utah. Or was.
Yeah.
During the summer of 2009, Richie attended a few Second City workshops in Chicago. One of the classes attended, he actually was actually Clown College, where Richie found his inner clown and gave it the name Davis. He has been married for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Two years this month.
2 years this month to his wife.
My wife.
Selena.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. The end of this month.
He is survived by his...
by my son?
By his son.
Well, crap. That was the only question I had was what did the T stand for in Richie T? So now I got nothing.
Okay. We'll see
I have nothing left to ask.
Thanks for coming by.
Bye.
Soon to not be, apparently.
That's because I'm trying to find a new name for my blog.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh.
So people are wondering, where did you grow up and where are you from?
I grew up here in Salt Lake City. That's where we're recording this in. All in a neighborhood of about 5 mile radius.
Wow.
We moved a bunch, but all within about a 5 mile radius. So I went to Silver Mesa Elementary. Let's all stand up for
Silver Mesas.
We were the Eagles. And then I went. Then my parents got divorced, so we moved in the middle school, 7th to 8th grade. Went to Albion for a year, and then Union Middle School for 2 years, and then graduated from Hillcrest High School in Midvale.
What extracurricular activities were you involved with at Hillcrest?
I did student government. I ran for student body vice president and lost. So then I ran again and became the senior class president.
Which is a lot better because you have more responsibilities after.
Exactly. Yeah, now you're in charge of all the reunions.
I don't know that it's much better, but it certainly is.
I know. But you leave more of an impact, I think, as a senior class president than student body president.
Mm-hmm. And especially as a student body vice president. Though still good friends with the girl who beat me as vice president. I also did choir. I did drama. I was in the jazz band. I pretended to play the valve trombone for a year.
You had long hair.
Uh-huh. That picture we posted at theculturalhall.com.
Was that your junior year?
Going into my junior year. I had hair down to about almost my shoulders, red, carrot topish hair. I got a perm.
Lots of people thought you looked like Rocky Dennis.
Yeah.
I thought that picture was a joke at first.
No, I did
when
too.
I saw it.
Yeah. Well,
I
did too.
I'm sorry.
Just a cruel, true joke.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a little bit about me. And then I went to a year of college at Southern Utah University, went on a mission to Cleveland, Ohio, and then came back, finished up 4 more years at Southern Utah University, and then moved back to Salt Lake.
So the biggest question that people have, and I think this is going to take the longest amount of time.
Okay.
we have heard you allude to possibly not being active in the church at some point in your life. Some people have said that you were excommunicated.
Sure.
So why don't we jump into that?
Okay.
Yeah,
we're going right for it.
It does appear a few times, and I think she's right. I think it will take the biggest chunk.
So you said, as part of your question, that I've never been active. That's not true.
Okay.
I've always gone to church almost every week. In fact, even on vacations and things like that, things that we've talked about before, when I was...
You're vacationing. I
go on,
you're active on vacation.
Yeah, and right. I go because I like to meet people, and I like to... It's kind of a reaffirming thing for my testimony to go to church in different places and be like, oh, yeah, still true here. But I also like kind of this... Like when we go to my wife's home ward, like I like getting to know the people that she was raised around and kind of the culture that's down there because it's different. Or when we're on vacation somewhere else, like I met Mitt Romney going to church on vacation one time. So, I mean, some pretty cool experiences going on vacation. But so let's start back. Before I left on my mission, we're not going to dive into this real, really deep because you don't need the gross details.
Oh, dive in.
Yeah, right. but I was pretty well behaved. But about a month or two before I went on my mission, I found myself with a girl in a parked car, and no clothes were removed, but there was a whole lot of movement going on, right? And then I ended up.
What is this?
And then I.
Because this feeling I'm feeling
sparking.
Yeah, we call it sparking.
We call it sparking.
I go then. You know, flash forward 3 weeks later, I go into the MTC. Now I don't know if this is the case anymore, but they used to have the. All right, let's have the guilt talk right as soon as you go into the MTC, which is essentially if you've done anything wrong, you need to fess up to it now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't worked this out, and I'm just sweating like crazy at the MTC going, you know, I think I need to talk to someone about this. So I went and I talked to him, and he said, you know, is there anything else? Was there any removing of clothing or touching that is inappropriate? And I said, no, but I feel really bad that I did this and I didn't bring it up. And he said, you know what? Forget about it. Just serve a valiant mission. And I said, okay, that I can do. And I did. No problem with anything of sexual nature at all. There were some missionaries that like would struggle with masturbation on the mission, stuff like that. Not that by no means was any sort of issue. So then flash forward 2 years, I come home.
And this should answer Anthony David Majangeli's question, are you gay?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Well, because there was a girl in the car.
Yeah, because there was a girl.
And I could answer that question for you, too. Yeah.
You were roommates.
He likes to give long, awkward hugs. I can tell you that. But he really likes the women.
Yes. Right.
And particularly one woman.
Yeah, particularly my wife.
Right.
We're going to interject all the questions that people put on Facebook and stuff like that throughout this. So I get home from my mission, and I'm like, okay, I'm home. And when I got home from my mission, I was all about getting married. It was like, this is the deal.
You know, I'm about it.
Yeah, because that's the next step. It's like, man, if I'm not married within a year, I don't know what my deal is. There was a girl who... I met my first year back to college who needed a place to stay for Thanksgiving. She was from somewhere back east, and she needed a place to stay. And so I said, hey, you know what? Why don't you come up and stay with my family? We do this fun Thanksgiving thing. It'll be fun. Just trying to be kind. And
but you were interested in her.
No, truthfully.
No?
Like mildly, sort of. But it wasn't like, oh, man, maybe this is the girl or whatever. It was just I was really more just trying to reach out. And being, you know, kind of a Christian person, saying, hey, okay, why don't you come and be with us for Thanksgiving? Well, she, I think, was interested in me a little bit. And so we found ourselves in that same situation that I had found myself in before, sparking, as you were. And then it was like, oh, crap, now I've ruined myself. I wasn't going to do this again. Now I'm back from my mission. I've done this again. And then, you know, I started dating someone else, and that occurred again. And that occurred a couple times after that. So in an effort to...
Hey, how many is a couple?
I would say four, so in total of five.
A couple usually means two, so
okay,
you're strict.
Okay, so I'm averaging
a
couple.
A few.
A lot.
A so, handful.
So feeling really guilty about this, you know, I thought, you know what, I need to go talk to my bishop about it. And I said, okay, here's the deal. I've been with these girls. This is what we did. I didn't, you know, there was no petting. There was no clothes removed. There was nothing of this kind of stuff. But this is what occurred. And he said, oh, well, we're going to have a disciplinary council. And we'll talk about this. And so I said, okay. Not being familiar with what a disciplinary council was at this time, I said, all right, that's a deal. That's fine. So I came back, I think it was the next Sunday, and sat down. And you know, basically recounted, this is what happened. This is how I met these people. This is how frequent it occurred, whatever. And they said, okay, go ahead and leave the room. And we'll make a decision and then invite you back in. So I go out in the room, or out in the hallway, and I'm out there for maybe 45 minutes. And it's just this agony-ridden, you know, what's going on? I never thought that it could be this kind of serious thing or whatever. And I come back.
They really leave you out there a while and make you think about it, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And my hope is that they were really deliberating on the inside, too, though not knowing.
Like they weren't in there playing like Frogger on their phones or something.
Now, is this disciplinary council down at down in Cedar?
In Cedar City.
Okay.
So this is, you know, it's a student ward then? Okay, so
That's surprising to me. Yeah, they're kind of used to, I mean, the bishop's got to have just a never-ending stream of kids coming in saying, oopsies, oopsies,
right.
Oopsies.
Sure. So I come back in the room. And I'll never forget this because I sat down, and they didn't waste any time. They said, it's the decision of this disciplinary council that you be disfellowshipped.
Disfellowship, but not exed.
Yeah, disfellowshipped. And I said, what? He said, well, you can continue to wear your garments. You should continue to pay tithing. But as far as praying or participating in church, we don't encourage you to do so. Hmm. And I said, but... Because at the time, I had a roommate who I knew was meeting with the bishop, who also, you know, was going full bore with his girlfriend, and had only received kind of a formal probation from the church.
Right.
So I went, wait, is this fair?
It doesn't make sense.
Didn't make sense to me. Right. Exactly. It didn't make sense to me. But here was the thing: as I sat in that meeting, and as they said. You know, you're going to be disfellowshipped from the church. It was the most amazing spiritual experience, probably like top five in my life, where it was just such a feeling of the Spirit that it was like, okay, there's only one thing that can be, and it's the Spirit. And so I said, okay, I don't get this. I don't know why this is occurring, but I know that it's something that, you know.
So you weren't angry?
No. For whatever reason, I was like, okay, I guess this is God's plan. This is God's deal for me.
And it wasn't you thinking, oh, good, because I know a lot of times people who get exed or disfellowshipped say, well, then forget you. This is my this is my free pass now to go out and do all the things that I have been, you know, denied all these years, drinking, smoking, partying, and having copious amounts of sex.
Right. Yeah, none of those things. It was just okay, well, and I made that determination that day to be like, you know what, I'm going to stop doing this, I'm going to make it back, and here we go. Well, the typical thing for disfellowshipment is you have to be out of the church or disfellowshipped for a year.
Really?
And yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a probationary time for you to kind of get your act together and then come back without
being expected. A long time.
Yeah, but you're still able to. What's different is that you're still able to, unlike excommunicated people, you're still able to wear your garments. You're still able, I think, to hold like some pretty minor callings.
You're not allowed to hold callings.
Oh, not you're not allowed to
hold callings. So I've heard.
You know, but you're still you're still very much a member of the church and expected to, you know, to do all that. So I was pretty heartbroken, but knew that it was what God wanted for me. You know, for whatever reason. And then 7 months later, I went back and I was allowed back in. So a shortened disfellowshipment time, special exception, whatever for me. And I was like, great, okay, this is awesome. The fall of that year, I met a girl who, and Rob can attest to this, in college, I dated a lot of people. And for the most part, I just kind of would go out on a couple of times with it. But people started to get to the point where they were like, what, are you ever going to date anyone for more than a day?
You were a serial dater.
Yeah. And so I met this girl who I absolutely, you know, just fell in love with. But I knew I had this experience. I can still remember the church parking lot that I was sitting in where it was like, you should not be doing this. This is not someone that you should date. But in my head, I went, you know what, I've got to prove people wrong that I can date someone. I'm doing it. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to date this person. So her and I, you know, we started dating. I was dating some other people on the side kind of stuff. And, but I continually would go out with her. Well, in the spring of that next year, her and I were alone hanging out at the apartment that I lived in, and it became a dare thing where it was like, hey, I dare you to take your shirt off. I dare you. Okay, I dare you. Back and forth, back and forth. And then kind of found ourselves in that situation, which I'd never done before. At this point, being a full-fledged member of the church. That summer, we spent the time apart, and I, you know, found myself in other situations where, like, petting and you know, other things sort of occurred, came back to school, and then those things developed with this girl who I had been dating. Come about December of that year, and so we're looking at December 2003 at this point.
Okay.
I was like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I want to be married. I want to be married in the temple. At this point, I hadn't ever had intercourse, but I'd, you know, things like oral sex had occurred and all that kind of stuff. And it was like, you know what? I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. So her and I said, you know what? It's me and you. Let's do this. Let's just not do this anymore. I'll just date you. If we don't do this, then there won't be a problem. And so we made that commitment to each other and we stopped. When I got back from school in January, you know, for the winter semester or whatever it's called, I went and I met with the bishop and I said, you know what? It's been a month since we've done anything. We've been meeting all along because I've never been shy to say, hey, you know what? I'm messing up, but I want to be in and be able to take the sacrament and everything like that. And he said, you know what? Going to have a disciplinary council based on what's happened. And I said, all right, you know, I've been through this before. And he said, well, no, this time it's going to be at a stake level. So I sat down at a stake level, and, you know, they always make you recount everything that you've done. And so it's like from the time that you were worthy to be able to take the sacrament until that day, it's everything that you've done. So it's like, man, I did this with this person, did this here. And, you know, I talked to the bishop about it, but you said everything since I was last able to take the sacrament. And sitting in a room where it was a brand new stake president, there were high counselors, and no one in the room knew me. And in college, this has a point, but go with me for a second. In college, my phone number was 590-LICK because I thought it was funny. And so in the college single wards, you had like a little whiteboard, and you'd put, you know, you'd have your picture, and then you'd write your phone number underneath it. So
they'd have
it for that. And so the picture that they use at my disciplinary council to show everyone is this picture with a whiteboard underneath it that says 590-LICK.
You pretty much shot yourself in the foot there, friend.
Right, but anyone who would have known me would know it wasn't, you know, some sexual lick or anything like that. It was just, hey, this is funny because it could have also been 590-JICK, or it also could have been 590-KICK based on the numbers because it's all the same. It was just, oh yeah, 590-LICK, that's funny. Like I had a buddy who, and I got the idea from because his phone number was Fart Ape. And so it was like, that's funny. Oh, what can I come up with? 590-LICK. That's funny. So
can I ask you a question before you move on?
Please.
Because this is something that I've discussed with other virgins and whatnot. So you said you never actually had intercourse.
Right.
But you did other things like oral sex and things like that. After having done all those things, did you still consider yourself a virgin?
I did.
You did?
Mm-hmm. Because I considered myself... And again, this can be varied, and I've also heard the other side where it's like oral sex. It wouldn't be called sex if it weren't sex. You're not a virgin.
Or if both parties achieve orgasm. I mean, I'm sorry to be blunt, but if that, you know, then is that sexual
behavior? Well, I didn't say she did. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry. No, not a funny joke. All right. Thanks, everyone. Leave me out there on that one. Thanks for leaving me high and dry there. Thanks a lot.
But you know, I mean, if we're, I'm trying to approach this very respectfully.
Sure.
I'm not trying to be gross or, you know, but.
No, but I did. I did consider myself still to be a virgin.
Okay. Because in your mind, you were following more of like the letter of the definition, which is, you know, okay.
Which is part to part, which had never occurred.
Certainly.
So I'm in that, and you know, I recount it. They say, "Hey, go out in the hall," and I come back in, and they say, "Yep, excommunicated. You're done." And
were you surprised this time, though?
I was. I was surprised because in my mind, still it was, but I haven't done this.
Oh, okay.
Hey, let me ask you something that maybe I missed. Were you in the same ward?
No.
It was a different ward. Okay.
Different ward.
But certainly they knew about the first...
Yeah, because I had told them about it. It was never something that they had been like, well, we heard or we found out this thing. It was always, I'm coming to you. I'm trying to be repentant about this. This has occurred again, and this is something I struggle with. But I'm coming to you, not someone that I've been with.
No one turned you in.
Yeah, no one turned me in or someone, done that way. And so at that point, I still have the journal entry. I wrote that night where it's like, I'm going to make it back in. I'm going to make it back in. And that next Sunday, I think that was a Tuesday night, that next Sunday was the only hard time that I've ever had going to church. Because at that point, I mean, there's a lot of things you don't think about. So I get done and I'm like, so I can't wear my garments anymore. So I guess I have to go underwear shopping. You know what I'm saying? And then it became this thing where it's like, because a lot of people know that I'm a Mormon person, still believe it and know that it to be true. There was all sorts of things that I had to think about. Because if you got a blue stripe on your underwear, those aren't garments,
right?
You know. And so it was every bit from the small physical things like that to, how do I tell my parents? How do I tell, my family and everything like that?
How do you tell a girl that you're potentially interested in?
Right.
Who wants to get married in the temple?
Right. And so, I just heartbroken. But that first Sunday, it was like, why do I want to go somewhere that they don't want me? Why would I want to be, if they don't want me, I don't want them. And then it was, and I had that thought for all of about 10 seconds, and then it was like, no, I probably should go. I probably should be there today. I'm pretty sure I know where I need to be.
That's that good Mormon guilt that you've been brought up
right.
with.
And so then I was excommunicated from the church from February 22nd of 2004 until December 12th of 2010. So I was excommunicated for six and a half years.
Why so long?
So,
why don't we talk about that after the second and after this
break? Coming back in the second block?
Yeah, let's do that.
We'll answer that question and more.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. 576 to book your shoot today.
All right, we're back in the second block of the Culture Hall. We're interviewing Richie D. Stedman, for those of you who don't know.
Let's take a second break before we get into some of the other questions.
Yeah, before we get into the other meat and potatoes, we do have a lot of fun questions that people ask.
So, Richie, how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
10 pounds.
Fantastic.
Who was that?
Lindy Bronson.
All right. That's truck driver friend of this Cultural Hall podcast.
Oh, fantastic.
The one that sends pictures every once in a while.
Do the horn thing.
I liked the question of your favorite non-spiritual mission moment, because you had to have a lot of them, knowing you.
My favorite? I think that I have two. So I'll share them both. I had the opportunity to see Miss Saigon on my mission.
Whoa. Wow.
Right? The heat is on in Saigon.
Wow.
My mission president didn't know what that Broadway musical was about.
Apparently not.
But Bill Swenson from the Singles Ward, and now he's on Broadway. He was nominated for a Tony Award, and I think he won, or at least the musical won. He was the lead.
Really?
So I went down. I went down and I saw this. I didn't know that he was the lead in it. I went down and I saw the show, and I'm reading the program wherein Will Swenson thanks his Heavenly Father for the gifts and talents that he's gotten. I'm like, Mormon buzzword. So I sent a note to him backstage and said, hey, you know what? I'm the elders from the church. We're here watching the show, whatever. Just wanted to say so. And so we pass it along, and then after the show, I get a note back to me that says, hey, come back to the backstage door. And I got to meet Will Swenson, and as it turns out, cool. His wife at the time had gone to school with my brother, gone to high school with my brother. And so it's like, hey, this is crazy. I'm serving a mission. So that was
awesome. Because he's since left the church, Will.
Right.
And he is now, is he remarried or engaged to that fantastic actress also on Broadway?
I think married.
Married to her. What is her name? What is her name?
Audrey McDonald.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so that would be one. Let me come back to the other one. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Hey, Corey Bruce wanted to know, great taste or less filling?
Taste great or less filling? Or great taste?
It says great taste or less filling.
I think it wasn't the old thing,
taste great. Yeah.
I always sat on the side of the magic carpet at, or not magic carpet, what's the ride at Lagoon?
No, it was the magic carpet, the one that did this?
No. The one that goes
the tidal
back
wave.
And forth.
Tidal wave. Yeah.
I always sat on the less filling side.
Yeah.
Yep.
Angela Davies wants to know, are we human or are we dancer?
Dancer.
Okay.
Why did you wear those oversized shoes in high school, asked Mary Macroff Ramirez.
Okay, so you guys none of you guys probably know this, but when I was in high school, my sophomore and junior year, Scottie Pippen came out with these red high tops, right? They were just normal basketball shoes like the Jordans or whatever, but Scottie Pippen wanted his own thing. They were bright red. That was it. A little bit of black on the side, but they were just a big red shoe. I was up at the Nike outlet with my friend Nate Pearson, who we always used to listen to Rage Against the Machine in his old Chevy Cavalier down Main Street in Park City. We stopped at the Park City outlet, and I found these size 17 big red Scottie Pippen high tops. And I thought, that is the coolest thing. Those are stupid. That's so ridiculous. So I bought them. And the reason why I bought them is going into high school, my brother had done student government. And I knew that that was what I wanted to do. I knew that student government was one of the things that I wanted to do. And if you guys remember the old McDonald's commercial, you'll always have a friend wearing big red shoes. I decided going into my sophomore year that that was one of the campaigns that I wanted to do. And so in order to perpetuate that, I knew I had to be, you know, the kid that wears the big red shoes? Well, you'll always have a friend wearing big red shoes. So multiple times a week, my sophomore and junior year, I would wear these size 17 Scottie Pippen shoes to school, not matching an outfit at all, but just sometimes it'd be a normal outfit with these size 17 big red Scottie Pippen shoes.
Were those the shoes you wore when you were the mascot?
I probably did once or twice.
Richie T was the SU T-Bird for a little while.
Thor. Oh,
Thor.
Nice.
As was I.
Ashley Goodrich Dixon asks, true or false, you kept a written record of every girl you made out with in college.
And in high school.
If the question is written record of every, false.
Okay. But there was, clarify.
A written record. But there is a written record and it contains most.
Why?
What are your numbers?
A lot. But I'll answer specifically.
Oh, come on.
No, I'll answer specifically. My wife is 217.
Wow.
Of people that I kissed. Number
217.
That counts high school. And here's the thing. So let's validate it a little bit.
And do you count people that you just kiss casually?
Yes.
Or like you flash kiss them or kiss them against their will?
Yes.
All right.
So a good like 30 or 40 of them were high school graduation night. You know, when you graduate and then you get your cap and gown, everyone's like, yeah, we graduated. Kiss. Nailed it down. Notch on the old book.
Wow. Okay, so we need to get back to why it took 6 years for you to...
All right, so I mentioned when I was excommunicated that I was like, man, I want to get back. I want to get back. And I tried really hard, but as you can probably imagine, the adversary working pretty hard against me, and I just screwed up. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, I want to get back. I want to get back. I want to get back. And then it just was like, I'm screwed up again. Okay, I want to get back. I want to get back. And quickly it became... I want to get back. I screwed up again. I screwed up. Okay. We'll try this at a different time.
The slippery slope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really was. And then it became, as it went further and further down the road, you know, I went further and further down the road. So it wasn't just, you know, oral sex and those things. It became increasingly more so and increasingly harder to not do.
Mm-hmm. But so did you lose your virginity then at that point?
Between the time I was excommunicated and rebaptized, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you did cross that threshold.
I did.
Okay.
And it's actually kind of a funny story, and people won't believe it, but I will tell you this. And I only bring this up because I think it's hilarious. After that first time, I literally stopped and went, wait, that's what that is? That's how that goes? I had no idea, and I really did. It's one of the funniest stories in the world that I go, wait, that... Huh? Did we? We did? So, apparently you don't think that's funny.
Didn't you go to sixth grade maturation class?
I did, but I had no idea. I really didn't.
We talked about this. Remember, the only thing he took from that was the boob-shaped cupcakes.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The cupcakes with the gumdrops on the top.
Yeah.
But you were going to church every Sunday through this entire experience?
Mm-hmm. Every week.
And you never stopped believing it?
No.
How did you deal with the guilt?
Because right? Bree just Seriously. Could not deal with
well,
it.
Well, no. Because, I mean, you know, and then not... And the pride, like you know, sitting there not taking the sacrament right. every week and sure. not wearing your garments. Like, how did you every Sunday get up and walk into a chapel?
You know, sometimes it was hard to be completely honest with you. It was really hard because I'm such a shy person.
Right.
Yeah. Like in church, when people would be like, oh, you know, because they know that I have a testimony of the gospel and everything. They'd be like, oh, will you go ahead and say a prayer? Well, actually, I can't. You know?
Right.
So then it would become things like when I would go into a ward, I would make sure that those who could possibly call on me to say a prayer would know beforehand.
Yeah.
And I became really comfortable with just telling people, hey, this is the situation, what's going on? Because I just, you know, hey, Richie, will you pray for us? No, I can't.
Right.
Big letter A, go ahead and slap that on my, yeah. you know, right. on my tie pin. So, I mean, it was hard. It was right. very hard. And the other thing that I don't think people think about that was hard for me was seeing other people who could not taking advantage of the opportunity to do so, you know, like, oh yeah, you can pray, but you don't want to. Oh, that makes sense. Cause here I am wanting more than anything in the world to be able to go say home teaching or be able to get up and say a prayer, but am trapped in this. I can't get out of this kind of thing and don't have the opportunity to. That was the thing that probably became the most frustrated thing for me, was seeing members of the church not taking advantage of the blessings that they had right there because they just didn't want to. Not because they couldn't, but because they didn't want to.
So there's like 217. You said your wife was number 217.
Yeah.
Okay, so why you were single for a while.
Uh-huh.
Why your wife? How did that happen, and what made her so special?
Which is, can I just interject here? Because I met Richie, I don't know, like maybe 5-6 years ago.
Sure.
And this, at the time, you were dating someone fairly serious.
Uh-huh.
The feeling was that this was a girl that you wanted to marry, but
sure.
maybe it just wasn't the right
just didn't
fit.
Work out.
And I remember that when it ended, you were pretty devastated.
Sure.
And so then when you started dating your now wife, it was like, well, good. I was glad to see that you were, you know, happy again, but mm-hmm. I think there was always that fear that you were going to maybe go back to this other relationship. But even sure. though that was, I don't even think that was like a potential, right? Because she had moved on.
Sure.
Right? And she was with somebody else too. Uh-huh. But I remember praying like, oh, please, Richie really deserves a good girl. Richie deserves a good, wonderful person. And then when I found out you were getting married, I was like, yay! So, I mean, so, yeah, so with that
so,
in
so
mind.
With that, so here's what it was. And I joke around about this with my wife, and I give this to every single person, you know, because married people instantly know everything about single people.
Of course.
I could not have been married literally a day earlier than when I married my wife.
Explain.
There is no way that I would have been ready until the day that her and I got married. I would have not been ready. Literally, to the day before, I had an experience where I went, not sure that I can do this. And then the day that we got married, it was like, yep, this is right. But why her? You asked.
Yeah.
It's a combination of a couple of things. One, I mean, you mentioned that relationship that I had. I mentioned the relationship that I had that kind of, I you know, got in a little over my head. Each one of those relationships taught me so much about who I was and what I needed. And there was enough of the bad in those relationships that I went, I can't have this type of person right. in my life and be with them for forever.
And I guess I should say, I'm sorry, sometimes I'm not very clear, but I think that was the point I was trying to make is right. that even though this former relationship, you loved her
sure.
and she's not a bad person. I sure. met her. She was great. I don't think that it was a good fit for you.
Right.
And it was full of a lot of drama.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was very drama filled,
yeah,
which
constantly.
Tends to follow us drama people around.
Sure.
But, you know.
but straight, succinct, and to the point, what I loved and was different about my wife was that she didn't allow me to just kind of mow her over.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, hold on, pal, there's another side to this, and it's me.
She had the checks and balances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, she's older than I am. There's a lot of things that... How to older? That. She's 3 years older than
oh,
I am.
Oh, okay. That's not bad.
So she kind of was a little bit more established. And I don't mean anything, you know, financial or anything like that, but it was like, this is my life. This is what I want from my life. Are you in for what I want from my life? Because if you're not, we're done. And I went, yeah, that sounds like fun. I'm in for those things. And then the rest, not necessarily easy from there, but was just a matter of getting it done.
And you became an instant dad, yeah. An instant father. Mm-hmm.
That's a party. That's the easiest thing in the world.
Okay. how old was he?
He was, when we got married, he was 11, almost 12.
So he was breaching that teenager, yes. Like angsty, you're yes. Not my father, don't tell me what to do sort
yeah.
Of thing.
Yeah.
That's the best time.
Yeah, right?
Perfect.
Yeah, cherish those moments.
That's the easiest time to slide into that.
How's that been?
You know, it is honestly the hardest part of our marriage and the family, honestly. Not him necessarily, but the dynamic of the expectations that I have of a son, the expectations that he has of a dad, the expectations that my wife has of a father of our child. And so, you know, it's been so difficult to be like, well, my dad did it this way, so I'm going to do it this way. And then it just doesn't work. And having to go, okay, well, this is a different creature. So how am I going to do this differently? And I made tons of mistakes, tons in the first year of being married and being a dad, that now I'm working through how that has affected our family and having to kind of go back and be like, hey, you know what? I was kind of this guy before. I'm not. I'm here. I love you, you know, and like for Father's Day this year. Oh, now I remember what I was going to say, but I will tell you, Father's Day this year, he gave me a hug, which was huge. I think we talked about here on the podcast.
Mm-hmm,
you did. But you know, all that stuff that you hear, and you just think it's the lamest stuff in the world, where it's like the kid succeeds and the parents are so proud, and you're like, womp, womp, cue the Hallmark card and the little inscription on the inside that says, thanks for being there. But that to me has been one of the most rewarding things. His first quarter of seventh grade, you know, he got all straight A's. And it was like, yeah, I had a part in that. He did most of the work, but I was around for that. And it was seriously like nothing else that I've ever experienced in my life. No accolades on stage, no anything like that. Not necessarily better or worse. It's such a different feeling from anything else I've ever experienced.
All right, well, so let's rewind a bit. Your parents got divorced. You were in high school?
Uh-huh. No, I was in middle school.
Middle school. Okay, let's talk about how that affected your life and then how it affects you now with your mom not being a part of the church.
Okay. So parents from about the time I was in third grade or so had pretty big problems. They would tell you maybe that they had them from the beginning, but I noticed it about third grade on. Going into seventh grade, I didn't have any sort of interest in theater, any sort of interest in, you know, student government, any of that. Well, I did start with student government, but
red shoes.
But it was, yeah,
girls.
The red shoes, dressing crazy, any of that kind of stuff.
And girls.
It was, no, I had interest in girls.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah,
okay.
Like fifth grade, sixth grade. Okay. I had crushes on girls that would never want anything to do
from
with me.
From the womb.
Yeah. Mom! Oh, that won't work. Somebody else! So going into seventh grade, like my classes, it was like, you know, keyboarding and typing and, you know,
it's the same thing.
What's that? Yeah, it is the same thing. No, but I'm doing a poor example of it, but it was a fairly regimented, like,
right.
I'm going to go into business and I want to be able to
math.
Be with computers. And,
science.
Right. And then parents get divorced. Well, things were bad and parents get divorced just the last part of my seventh grade year. And my older siblings, I'm middle. So my older siblings, my oldest one was kind of able to deal with it her own way. She'd gone off to college. The older brother kind of dealt with it where he's just like, I'm going to close down. And then the two younger siblings were like, we don't know what's going on. But it left me to go, all right, I'm going to need some attention here. And it real quickly became for me a way that I would just be like, okay, I can act out. I'm pretty funny. I'd always been pretty funny in elementary school and done, you know, some talent shows and stuff like that. But it was like, hey, this is a way for me to get attention, for me to feel good about myself. And so I just kind of lashed out that way.
Did you want attention from your parents that way?
Yeah. And I got it. I got into some trouble. You know, they always did a pretty good job about, you know, letting me know that they cared, that I mattered. But, I mean, they forgot my 13th birthday as part of the whole thing.
Aww.
And so they would say that they didn't, that they were just waiting because I had kicked a hole in the wall. But it literally wasn't until the very, very end of that day on my 13th birthday that they're like, oh, yeah, it's your birthday. And I'm like, I got forgotten.
That's like something out of a movie.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe I created it to be that drama.
Yeah.
But I just remember.
But you turned a negative into a positive.
Yeah. Turned it around.
And your parents both got remarried.
Yep.
And did your mom leave the church? Like, what do you think the church kind of was like one of...
Hey,
can I ask
that? Questions
that?
Here?
What?
Did you read my questions?
I did
here?
Not. Sorry.
Oh, that's exactly.
But no,
what
I was wondering, was the church kind of a point for your parents, kind of like a disagreement? Did that kind of?
So it depends on who you ask. My own personal feeling is partially with the church. Yeah, I know you guys don't fight. So my mom, once the kids started to get a little bit older. My mom decided she wanted to go back to work. And I think that she always liked that. And I don't think, because right around that time was when there was a talk at General Conference that said women shouldn't be working, they should be at home with the kids, which is something that they've always said, but there was a fairly strict and stern talk about it. So this is the 80s, late 80s. And I think that that really rubbed my mom wrong. I think that she really liked being at work. She liked doing the things that she did at work. And so I think that part of that dynamic of her working was part of it. Now, I'm not saying, as Brianne, who is a working mom, looks at me saying...
I'm glaring at him right now.
I'm not saying that that is the case for everyone. I think that that was part of it. The other part of it is I think that when my parents were having difficulties, I think that, you know, the idea is, well, what's best for the family? Husbands guide the family. You go in prayer. And this is certainly something that is kind of maybe being... gone away from a little bit now, but it used to be, and everyone knows, it was much more a patriarchal, husband lays down the law, wife is expected to do it, and that's not what my mom was in for. And so I think when she kind of put foot down and said, hey, I think this isn't okay, or I have an opinion too, you know, the disagreement between her and the church kind of came about. And though she didn't leave immediately, like my parents didn't get divorced, and then she's like, out! I think that it just kind of festered within her, and then to the point where, it is now where we can't even talk about the church with her at all. Oh, and why she didn't do episode 50 with us.
So she's quite bitter then.
Pretty angry about it. And not just for that, not just for that reason, for a lot of reasons.
All right. So let's take a quick break. We'll come back in the third block. We are going to answer some questions for all our listeners who know you from Radio From Hell, your day job.
Hey, it's me, Richie T. Want to take a second and tell you about my buddy Dylan over at Lennon Design. Go to LennonDesign.com to see some of the stuff that he's done. Or, you know what, better yet, go to theculturalhall.com and look at all the graphic stuff that we have there at that website. You know who's done that? Dylan at Lennon Design. He's offering a special deal for people in the Cultural Hall, a 10% discount. You know why it's 10%, right? And all you have to do is just give him a call, 801-699-3022. Any sort of graphic artwork or website design that you might need, give him a call. Think about Lennon Design. You know, they sponsor your favorite podcast.
All right, we are back. This is the third block of the Cultural Hall with your guest, Richie T. Stedman, and your host.
Hey!
So, I actually took over the duties today. So, we have a lot of people that know you from Radio From Hell, so we have a lot of people who listen to the podcast. I imagine some of those people are not all members, but they are fans of Richie T. I don't know how they would be a fan of you, but they are.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know. So, have the hosts of Radio From Hell truly offended you when they talk about the church? Has there ever been a moment where they talked about something and then you're like, you know what, I'm going to talk to them behind the scenes and say, this is how it affects me? Have there been moments like that?
Well, it's a two-part question. One, I've never been offended by anything that they've said.
Okay.
Basically because I feel like everyone kind of has the right to say whatever that they want to say.
Exactly.
And I don't attach meaning a lot to things like that. But there have been times when I've said, hey, you know what, probably we shouldn't talk about this anymore. Or
Do you speak up on the radio sometimes?
I will occasionally. Or I'll just offer the opposite opinion and say, hey, you know what? The reason why we're probably talking about this is because, A, B, C, whatever those things are. But never been offended. But the way that I kind of draw the line with them is anything about, like, profits and anything about garments that isn't just like, oh, your magic underwear. Like, if it goes further than that, I just...
Like, yeah, this is taboo.
To me, I've just said, hey, you know what? really pretty disrespectful.
Troy Wood wants to know, do you ever want to punch Carrie or Bill in the face?
Yes.
All right.
And not over issues of religion.
Diane Glor Kohler asks, if Gina said yes, would you go there?
I would not, because I'm married happily.
If you guys,
I have kissed Gina before, though.
If you and Gina were not...
If we were not married, no, yes. I still wouldn't. Gross. Okay. No. I answered the question as it was posed.
Let's okay.
Don't say gross. She's
no,
gonna,
she knows.
She's going to listen
no,
to
she
this.
Knows.
And she probably thinks you're gross.
Do yeah. they listen to the podcast?
No.
Never?
No.
Oh. Doesn't right. it doesn't interest them. Let's keep going here. This is from Carly.
Okay.
I just lost where did I... Carly, where's your question? Have you made it into the Guinness Book of World Record yet?
Yes.
For what?
The world's longest human spooning chain.
Awesome.
Spoonfest 2003, Southern Utah University.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Rob, you were there, weren't you?
I was not. This was after I graduated.
That's
and that
right.
was a huge controversy. The people at the Institute did not want you to do that.
Well, people at Southern Utah University got all upset, too. We will not be donating to a university that promotes spooning with one another. If you look up Google search Spoonfest and SUU Journal, you can hear my quote that says, if people don't agree with this, they can go fork themselves.
I was gonna say, it's like, because when they start to spooning, the next step is the forking,
right?
Oh wow.
So here's my question, when do you think you'll move on from Radio From Hell and do your own thing? Do you want to host your own show?
I do.
And do you want me to be your producer?
Yes.
Okay. And you want us to be your co-hosts.
Listen, we're doing this podcast for me has been a huge thing in the last year. Now that we're just passing a year, has been a huge opportunity for me to be able to do some of my own hosting stuff and have learned a tremendous amount about how to do it.
Yeah.
For people that are, you know, converts trying to go back and be lifers, if you go and listen to the early ones, it's very much where it's
really
like,
rough.
Whew, how are we going to get through this? But if it would be a very difficult thing if someone came to me and said, hey, we want you to do the cultural hall as a real paying gig, for me to not say, all right, Radio From Hell, I'm done.
Yeah.
Right. Like be syndicated as in, you know, put the cultural hall on the radio.
Right. Well, it is on the radio now. I mean, we're on the radio
live?
Now in Southern Utah.
But not live to where you could have someone call in
exactly.
and ask questions.
Sure,
and
make it a full-blown show. Yeah,
right.
I would be really hard-pressed to not be like, okay, I'll go do that.
All right.
Do I get asked my question?
Yes,
yeah.
It's your turn.
Yeah.
You told me once that Clown College changed your life, mm-hmm. but I never heard the story as to why.
So this was 2009, and right before I went away to Clown College, I was going to go spend 5 weeks in Chicago, and my life was essentially just out of control, literally out of control. I'd made huge mistakes with two different people right before I left, all within the same week. And
girls? Are we talking about girls?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're talking about sex, so if you want to, if I need to lay it straight out.
Well, I don't know if you've gotten into like some bad business deals or some shady, some other
thing. The mafia was on his case.
The Mormon mafia?
Yeah.
And it was just this thing where the life that I was in was, I was so deep and so confused and so just wrapped up in it that I literally could not get myself out of it. And so I went to Chicago, and it was the ability for me to say, all right, life in Utah, I'm not going to be connected to you for the next 5 weeks. And I didn't. I think I talked to my parents one time while I was there, and it was as if I was able to end the life here and be able to go to Chicago and start a new life. And I stayed with a guy, his name's Steven, who I didn't know at all. He's a member of the church. Knew me through Radio From Hell, said, come stay with me. And I stayed on his couch with his cat, which was not my favorite because I'm terribly allergic to cats, but it was, you know, beggars can't be choosers. And this particular thing, Clown College, there were two lessons that Clown College taught me. The first lesson was that there isn't anything that you can't overcome. Basically being, you know, like when you see clowns perform, they're you know, they make up some imaginary something, and that's how they're able to overcome the problem, whatever the problem is that they've come to, but they're able to overcome the problem because they believe they were able to overcome the problem. So you know, that just was this mind-blowing thing, especially in the place that I was in, that there isn't anything that can't be overcome. And then the other thing kind of goes hand in hand with it is that nothing's a big deal. You know, oh, your house is on fire, you know, oh, it's a yeah, but it doesn't really matter. It's in this imaginary world of you know, your house is on fire. Now, granted, if my house was on fire, that would be a big deal. But really, is it a big deal?
So you learn perspective, basically. Yeah,
right. But at clown school in Chicago, that's right. Weird. It's a weird thing.
Everyone learns differently.
But I would not be here doing this had I not had that experience. And while I was out there, I was able to start every morning. I would read my scriptures. That's something that I hadn't done in a long time. I would write in my journal. I'd say my prayers. And it was literally a time where I just was able to be by myself in my thoughts and changed, you know, who I was. When I got back from Chicago, within the week, I went on my first date with my wife. And within a month, I was only dating my wife. And then within, you know, a year, I was married.
Sorry I wasn't a better influence on you when you lived with me.
That's all right.
So,
it wasn't time. I mean, really, that's what it was.
It's, right.
Everything is so much
at
like
the
it's
right
just this. It's
time,
all the.
At the right place.
Where's her microphone?
Don't turn me off. No, I have a question, though.
Okay.
Because, again, I don't know if we've ever mentioned this, but you and I know each other originally from the Desert Star Theater, uh-huh, which is a theater here in Utah that does parodies.
Right.
And
hilarious.
Then It's fun. And you and I also both have been very involved with improv, and Rob also does improv.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of a lot of theater kids' dreams in Utah to run off to, say, Chicago,
mm-hmm,
and try it out with Second City, because
sure,
Second City is basically what feeds SNL.
Sure.
And it's sort of like Chicago is the theater kids' Broadway, or the improv kids' Broadway.
Sure.
So after having gone out there and done those things, is that still an itch that you feel a need to scratch?
Absolutely.
Like, you think to yourself, honey, maybe we could just uproot all this and give it a real shot in Chicago. Or LA or wherever.
Yes, it is. That's not something that will happen.
So it's one of those things where it's like it's a dream, but you're okay with it not.
Well, here's
happening.
The deal. I would go if my wife would listen to this and then said, "Hey, you know what? I've been thinking about it. Let's move to Chicago. That's a great idea." I would not hesitate for a second.
Okay,
but you know, I made the commitment to her and love her very much, and she likes it here.
And you won't feel as if your life was not as fulfilling.
No, I think it's very fulfilling. It's a different thing.
Well, right, it's that perspective.
Sure.
It's not that one way is better or worse. It's just different.
Yeah, it's an absolutely different kind of thing. I would love to do it, but to me, there's so many people that feel like they have to go somewhere else in order to be someone. And maybe this is contradictory to what I just said about clown school. But I like growing here where I'm planted, and that's part of the reason why. We mentioned it here on the podcast. I also do the Salt Lake Comedy Festival. That's part of the reason why I do that, is because maybe I can't go to Chicago, but I can create something great here for people that are maybe in a similar situation.
And make a lot of comedians really, really mad, apparently.
Right, yeah, apparently so. But, you know, create a situation here where it's like, okay, maybe there's other people. You know, right, maybe there's a wife who really is into improv, but knows that being a mom is the more fulfilling thing for her. But if there was something here that she could participate in, she'd be all about it.
And is your wife pretty supportive about your dreams and ambitions? Or is it kind of like, does she just sort of suffer it because you're her husband and she loves you?
I know that she wants me to be happy. She doesn't enjoy some of the things that I do. Like improv and her, she just doesn't love it.
Just doesn't get
it. And sometimes that's hard, but I've gone to enough improv shows that I don't love. I kind of understand it.
Yeah,
where it's
yeah,
just like, okay, I get where you're coming from. But, you know, the reason why this podcast exists is because my wife said, either do it or shut up about it. And I said, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm not shutting up about
this. Thank you, Richie's wife.
And that's, you know, it's hard. That's tough sometimes. That's sometimes where we argue. But the tough love that she gives me as far as some of those things are motivators, as opposed to just allowing me to kind of casually be, which was the problem with the other people that I dated in the past. They'd be like, oh, but you're Richie, you can whatever, it doesn't matter. And then I just kind of, you know, stayed stagnant.
You had a question, right? Are we about there?
We're almost there. If you could say something to Lauren.
Oh geez, there you go. Was that from her or from you?
No, this is from me. Because I'm friends with Lauren.
If I could say something to Lauren Johnson.
Who's Lauren Johnson?
She was the original co-host of the Cultural Hall here with me.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Episode 1 through 21. If I could say one thing to Lauren Johnson, the original co-host of the Cultural Hall, I would say I wish that things could be different, and I enjoyed your company here on the Cultural Hall.
All right. Wow, any other questions?
That was the toughest question.
Yeah.
Right? What do you think, Brother Kyle?
You struggled with that a little bit.
Well, it's hard because we had different thoughts of where it needed to be, and ultimately I felt responsible for the future of where this went.
Right.
A couple more questions from Sue Folland Evans. If you could live in a different country, she put county.
But she means country.
I imagine.
Daggett, if she meant county.
Okay.
Not Emory?
No.
Richie!
I live there already, it seems like.
Morgan County is beautiful.
Yeah, but go to Daggett County.
Okay.
Iron County for me.
If I could live in a different country, I'm really in love with Costa Rica, where my wife and I just got back from. It was gorgeous.
Will you hit a man?
What's that?
You hit a man.
Yeah, on a motorcycle.
Yes.
This is a good question. I don't know how Sue knows you, but is your car full of costumes now that you're married?
It is still.
All right. Has your life got any more organized since you got married?
I am the one who probably 60% of the time cleans our house. I 100% of the time make dinner. That's something that I never did before. And everything but my car. My car is the only thing that I've maintained to keep dirty. Everything else I've had to be clean. You remember being roommates with me?
Yes, it's terrible.
Clothes all over the floor, nothing put away, anything like that. But that's all changed since I've been married, but my car remains absolutely just a sty.
Travis Tate, do you know how to tie a bowline hitch?
Yes.
Amy Huff Hansen, do you remember all the choreography the choir performed for We Go Together from ninth grade?
Yes.
You do know that.
Yeah, that was my old middle school choir teacher.
Were you Danny?
No.
Is it that song?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nick Fitzgerald, who was it in middle school that started that rumor about you? What was
okay,
the rumor?
So Nick Fitzgerald, this is interesting. Nick Fitzgerald is the son of the guy who owns this room that we record this podcast
in.
Bob. What Nick is referencing is in eighth grade, there was this kid in my English class, Mrs. Johnson's English class, who in the week of Valentine's Day, you could send a flower to... or candy to a significant other. It was a fundraiser for like Helping Hands Club or whatever. And so at lunch, you'd say, hey, this is what their sixth period class is. Send them this. And it was all the week of Valentine's Day. And the second day of that week, this kid, Nick, says, not Nick Fitzgerald, a different kid, Nick, says, hey, you know what? My girlfriend's going to send me something this week because I got a girlfriend and I'm all about having a girlfriend. So I've got a girlfriend that I mentioned and she's going to send me something. So I thought it would be really funny to the next day at lunch, bring a couple extra bucks, talk to the people at the Helping Hands table or whatever, and send him a flower and, you know, leave a specific inscription on the flower, the little note that came with the flower, that there would be something that I could remember that I could read back to him and say, haha, see, it wasn't your girlfriend that sent it to you, it was me. So I paid for the flower, came in, sixth period, they came in, we've got a flower for Nick. Gets the flower. See, I told you, everybody. And I said, yeah, does the inscription say blankety blank whatever the inscription said? And he's like, hey, you sent this to me, fag. And so then, you know, class gets out and he's waiting outside of the thing and he beats me over the head with the flower. And he was friends with a couple other people who were, you know, not to stereotype or generalize, but they were athletic kind of jockey guys. And it was like, oh, yeah, the fag. The gay guy, the faggot who gave flower to a guy. And so all through the rest of eighth grade, so February through the rest of that year, and then all through ninth grade, it was like, oh, yeah, the gay guy, he sent a flower to a kid. And a couple kids actually got expelled from middle school because of it, because it was sexual harassment.
Well, it's hate crime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hate crime before hate crime was.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
So 10 years, I'll be 42. I will... I don't know. Hopefully I'll be doing my own gig. That's the plan.
Sounds good.
The Cultural Hall will be as popular as Rush Limbaugh.
Right? I would love for that to be, not as Rush Limbaugh, but I would love it. I would love for this to be a career that I could have. In 10 years, I don't know. That puts me over my 40s. I'd like to still be in good shape.
I'd still be in good shape.
What are you debating there, Brother Kyle?
Kyle doesn't open his mouth the entire interview.
Just for a little
I
insult.
Did.
Just for a little insult at the
sorry.
End.
I had
been in decent shape. Instructor over there.
You know, truthfully, I hope to have a kid. I have the stepson. I don't know that it's going to be in the cards to have another, but I would like to.
Two more questions. Mark Tanner, he wanted to know more about your mission, so I'm going to ask these questions.
Kay.
It's not a numbers game, but how many baptisms did you have? And do you still communicate with those people?
Well, Rob, it's not me that converts. It's right, the spirit that converts.
How many people did you have the pleasure of bringing to the
dunking?
People that I actually had the opportunity to go into the water with, there were five people that I was able to baptize.
That's great.
People that I taught and ended up being baptized. I think ultimately ended up being about 21 or 22.
Okay.
But
do you keep in contact with any of them?
I keep in touch with one of them. A very close and dear friend, one who's actually mentioned in my patriarchal blessing, not by name, but when I read my patriarchal blessing, I know
that's the person.
That's the person that it's talking about. Her name is Melissa. And just real quick, this is an awesome story. She lived on a street that we had prayed about and knew that we were supposed to go. But every time we were going to go to that street, something else came up. And then finally, on the day that we went to the street that she lived on, this is a Bridget, of course, but the day that we went to the street that she lived on, she was home. Her parents had just gotten back from visiting Utah, going to Zion's, going to Temple Square, and had pictures on her countertop of her parents at Temple Square and with the Christus. And I had a picture of the Christus with part of my, you know, my scripture things. We're talking to her and said, hey, you know what? This is important. We want to share this message with you. It's very important. And then she said, hang on. She went upstairs and she grabbed her journal and she said, in her journal, essentially paraphrased, that she knew that she needed to do something as far as her life goes, and that she was looking for a sign, looking for a message from God on how she should lead her life. So if we would have gone there any other day or any time before, I strongly feel like it wouldn't have worked out the way that it did. But, you know, such a bizarre thing to be like, hey, we're praying for this street is right, and this street is right now. To her house, and she's got a son who's a couple years out from going on a mission. She's stayed strong within the church, and it's just an awesome, awesome kind of thing.
I just remembered a question that you said that you would answer for me
last
time when we were talking.
Okay.
And forgive me, but and it could be as simple as yes or no.
Yes.
If you want. So the gospel. Do you believe it?
Yeah.
Really? Truly?
Yeah. I would not. There were so many times for me to not be a part of it that for me, it's not a question. And to some, I think that bothers them because there have been so many things in my past. But to me, it's just like it's not a question. There are things that I go, huh? But you know, I know it's true. I know where I need to be on Sundays and throughout the week. So it's never been a question. It's just how, not is it?
Okay.
What's your favorite hymn?
Spirit of God, number two. Reason why? Sang it in the Kirtland Temple.
Awesome.
Awesome.
All right, last question.
Okay.
If you could talk to your 18-year-old self today, what advice would you give to him, or what would you tell him?
Keep your promise.
Yeah. I knew that was coming back. Are you working that into every episode that you're on now?
Yeah, basically.
I am now. Yeah.
I think, I don't know. Man, that's such a great question. I think that I would just say I'll just go stream of conscious thought on some of these things. I would say that girls don't matter as much as you think that they do. And focus on, you know, other things in your life and take the opportunities that are presented to you and stop worrying so much about who you're going to go on a date with, who you're going to be with, who you're going to be married to, who you might be seen with, and just, you know, just experience life. I think I would also say, you know, the things that you were taught, do them. And do them at the times that they're the hardest. And don't think that you're stronger than the situations that you put yourself in. Don't think that you're an exception to, you know, how the adversary could attack you or, you know, what could come your way. Because you're not.
Okay, I lied.
Okay.
We have questions that we ask all all our people that come to the cultural hall. What's your calling?
I don't have a calling. Oh, not true. I just recently, I got called but never had to do it. I was called as the ward storyteller for the ward campout, but they didn't ask me to do it. My previous calling to that was I spoke at...
I thought you taught Elders Quorum.
Oh, you're right. I do teach Elders Quorum. I'm sorry.
Jeez.
That's a calling.
Well, no, that is a calling.
You
and I forgot because I was supposed to do it yesterday. I haven't done it for like a month because I only do it once a month.
Yeah.
I haven't done it. You're right. I do
and
have
what's
a
your
calling.
Dream calling?
My dream calling, that's embarrassing that I forgot my own calling. My dream calling would be to be a home teacher to people that want nothing to do with the church.
Yeah, you did say that.
Yep.
I remember that one.
I think that to me sounds like the coolest calling in the world.
Way to fellowship.
Isn't that called like ward mission leader?
No, no, no. Because I don't want anything to do with the rest of that stuff. I think it would be fun, and I'm not saying I don't want to help bring people into the church as far as like new people that might be coming in. I strictly want to be like, here are three families who for whatever reason have not removed their names from the church. Go and visit them.
Go and bring them back.
And what's your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith is clarity. When I'm doing what's right and I'm balanced with everything that's going on in my life. So, you know, this is mental clarity, spiritual clarity, and everything just kind of comes together when I'm doing it right and devoting the right amount of time to everything. The clarity that comes from living a balanced life with the gospel and following the gospel principles is unparalleled.
And where can people find you other than your house?
Yeah. Well, you can find me at my house. You're not allowed there.
You're on Twitter, right?
Yeah. No, you can follow me at Twitter at Richie T. Stedman. You can follow me on Facebook. I have a regular page, Richie T. Stedman. I also have a fan page. I'm that guy. It's at Richie T.
And do you still have your original set of teeth?
Do I have my original set of teeth? I have all my original set of teeth, but I have two that have been...
No. Like, do you have... I mean, sorry, your original fakes.
My original... I don't have my original retainer, but I do have the last retainer that I have. I've kept it. It's in my car.
you know, just in case.
But no, it's symbolic to me. Yeah. I don't want to forget who I was, and I don't want to forget who I am.
All right. Well, we'd like to thank you, Richie, for opening up to us.
So then who's next?
Who's next what?
Who gets interviewed next?
Well, I don't know.
And I had this all wrong. I brought a bunch of mean jokes about Richie. I thought this was a roast.
Oh, yeah.
Stupid ginger.
Let's hear one. I mean, you already got me a couple times in it.
No, I know. I erased them all. Yeah. We'll save it for the roast. Oh. I'll come up
with
them.
No, but I'm serious. I think we should let people vote on who they want to learn more about next. Be it the life of the party or brother...
Rob, no way.
As I choke on my own spit.
I have to get married first before I can air my dirty laundry, right?
Yeah, right? So. Otherwise, no.
No.
No, I appreciate being able to do it. And certainly if people have other questions that we weren't able to get to, I'd certainly be more than willing to answer them. In the meantime...
Well, we hope this podcast has been nourishing and strengthening to your body.
When you travel home, you'll do so in safety.
Are you staring at me? Because I'm hoping that people will, if they have been sick or afflicted, that next week they'll be healthy and able to attend.
And please bless the sugar out of all this crap that we're about to eat.
Yum. And in the meantime, we'll save you a seat for you.
On the back row
of the cultural hall. Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back.